In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I saw one of these stories just last night on the local news. Parents upset about something being taught in the public schools. Most often you see these stories, though, from a Christian perspective in that alternative conservative media that usually ends up in your news feed or someplace else on social media. Why does it always end up there? And why is the reporting there always so disappointingly one-sided? It may not be media bias. Joining us to talk about media coverage of alleged religious discrimination in public schools, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be here.
These stories like alleged religious discrimination in the public school classroom, we often read about them in the so-called alternative conservative media. Why do they usually end up there?
Well, I think the short answer to that simply is you could say lawyers. That takes, you can blame everything on lawyers, you know, if you try hard enough. But what I mean in this case is there's no place right now where people are as scared of lawyers as in American public education. And this has everything to do from transgender bathrooms to Christmas carols to language issues in play. I mean, you name some issue about freedom of expression, especially that involves religion, and the next thing you know, you have a potential lawsuit on your hand. I think the important thing for listeners to realize first is why these things keep happening. And the simple fact of the matter is that our public schools are being asked to define the world more and more and more in less offensive ways, or ways that offend, that don't offend certain victim groups. Second, higher demands are being made on them when it comes to removing religion from parts of public life where, for better or for worse, it was before. I grew up in Texas, and I can honestly say, you know, that the Southern Baptist ethos was the undefined state religion, you know, of the state of Texas. And if you were Catholic or atheist or whatever, you pretty much had to put up with that when it comes to public schools. Well, that's not the way things are anymore. And the other reason these stories keep showing up all the time is that they're absolutely crucial to two competing groups of fundraisers. I mean, the ACLU, the American Atheists, and a whole lot of other groups couldn't do 90% of their fundraising if these stories didn't keep showing up, implying that theocracy is still ruling in our classrooms, etc. And on the other side, you have scores of politically and religiously conservative organizations that can't send fundraising letters out either if these cases don't exist. Does that make sense? So they don't go away because these people urgently need them to exist. Now, your question is, why do they keep showing up in conservative media? Well, after I posted the Get Religion piece about this KHOU story, this ended up on the front page of the local newspaper. And this was a case where it got into the public press because there were public events that journalists could cover, whereas most of the time, these stories unfold as a kind of he said, she said battle between angry parents and school administrators who have no incentive whatsoever to talk publicly. And when school officials won't talk publicly, the only media that are going to be willing to cover these stories are usually on the political and cultural right. Does that make sense?
So that's the journalist's dilemma. It starts with the journalist's dilemma here, doesn't it?
The journalist's dilemma is who's going to talk to you. If I call them on the telephone or I show up and knock on their door, who is going to answer my questions? Now, when you consider that the typical education beat reporter literally cannot function on their beat without the cooperation of local public school officials and administrators and teachers. You can't do your job without their cooperation. How much incentive do you have to, quote-unquote, stab them in the back by covering these stories without their help?
So you are, if you're covering them without their help, you're going to make them mad. If you are, if you manage to get a quote and make them look bad, you're going to make them mad. Nonetheless, you're cutting off major sources in your beat.
Yeah, and if you want to look at what this looks like from the other side, sometimes when the public officials decide to talk about these things, they talk about them in extremely veiled and legalistic jargon, you know, which is another way of trying to shut the story down. We have a situation unfolding here in Tennessee that I've written about at Get Religion as well, where you have a host of parents who are very concerned about what their very young children are being taught about Islam. And at the center of their concerns is this whole idea that if you quote the pillars, if you're required to learn to write and to speak the pillars of Islam, including the crucial Islamic prayer that, according to millions of Muslims, if you simply recite this prayer, you are now a Muslim. Listeners may flash back to the Boko Haram stories, you know, where all the girls were kidnapped, and then they sent out videos of these girls reciting this prayer. You remember that?
Yeah.
Well, that's the same prayer that students are being required as early as elementary school to learn to write and recite during their units on Islam. And this is a classic case of parents freaking out. Now, do they have reason to freak out? Well, simply stated, there are millions of Muslims who think that saying that prayer makes you a Muslim, and there are millions of Muslims who think it doesn't, unless you say it with true intent. But the odds that Christian parents in a lot of major cities have heard of Boko Haram and have heard of the reciting of this prayer is actually pretty good. So now you have Christian parents showing up at their schools screaming bloody murder about their children being required to learn all this stuff about Islam. The local officials decide to talk about it. They describe it as strictly an issue of parents not wanting their children to learn the basics about Islam, which you need to do to understand our world today, and that's all they say. And the local officials never address the issue of the reciting of the prayer. Now, when the story comes out in the paper, the tendency is for you to get all of one side or all of the other. In the conservative media, all you hear about is the parents, and the parents are upset for perfectly valid reasons. If you read about it in the mainstream press and the local officials choose to talk, all you hear is that these parents are scared of their children being educated about Islam, and that's totally unreasonable in the complex world we live in today, right? Where can you read accurately reported the actual concerns of the parents in the language that they would use to describe their concerns and an actual articulate response from the local school officials? Where are you going to get both of those?
So how did this play out in the KHOU story?
It's still playing out. What happened in this case was that the girl who said that on this test she was required to state as fact that God does not exist. This seems to have been kind of a test that was supposed to make you realize the difference between beliefs, opinions, commonly stated public square knowledge, and scientifically provable fact. And it seems the teacher's point was that the existence of God is not a scientifically provable fact, so the girl was going to get – her answer was going to be wrong if she didn't state God is real is not a fact. So see it was some sort of critical thinking exercise. The girl tried to get around this every way she could, according to her, and this ended up going home. The parents got very upset. The press was able to cover this one because the family made available an actual copy of the test, so you actually had a document. You could read what was going on. And second, the girl stood up in a public place where you could aim a camera at her and quote her. So what we have here is kind of the classic situation where the school officials say, oh my, we are very sorry that you're upset about the situation that you have clearly misinterpreted. And what does that say? Literally, what does that mean to you?
Well, it means we're sorry that you're upset.
We're sorry that you are upset, even though you're wrong. We're still sorry you're upset. And no, and once again, we're back down to what actually happened. This one in Houston was actually nowhere near as complex as some of the events that we're having right now linked to either sexuality or to Islam. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the headlines about the case unfolding about the the whole issue of gender identity in locker rooms and showers. That's the whole, all of this times 100, when it comes to the emotions that are involved. And the fierce loyalty of the activists, who want to make sure that these changes get made. The ultimate issue, and this may be the story that's developing, simply stated, to what degree do religiously traditional people have the ability to remain in public schools? Now, this issue's been growing for some time, but I don't think anybody would think it's not getting more and more intense. And at some point, in certain states in the union, this is going to begin to affect how people view funding their local public schools, their tax levies, whether or not, in other words, why should I fund the existence of schools that actively undercut my religion? Right now, that's a fairly fringe belief in America, but you keep getting these cases over and over. It could go non-fringe at some point, at least in conservative states.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of alleged religious discrimination in public schools. When we come back, how the Houston story is a little different. Stay tuned. Standing firm in a hostile world is the theme of the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th. This Confessional Lutheran Conference features Issues Etc. guest Adam Francisco, David J. Weber, Joe Abrahamson, attorney Mark Stern, and Professor Alan Quist. If you are in Texas or would like some warmer weather in February, check out the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th at faithlutheransa.org. faithlutheransa.org.
Do you long for a church that celebrates the divine service with reverence and joy, but without the unbiblical baggage imposed by a supposedly infallible hierarchy? Do you long for a church that confesses a divinely instituted office of the holy ministry for the giving of the Lord's gifts to his people, and yet values and lifts high the priesthood of all believers? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We're what you've been looking for. Find an historic, authentic church near you on the Find a Church page at issuesetc.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, issues, etc., and you. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of alleged religious discrimination in public schools. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Terry, you were talking before about how all these things often unfold in terms of the media coverage. Now, it sounds like what you're saying is that the difference here with the Houston story, the KHOU story, is that, first of all, there is some testimony from the student herself, and then there's also a physical copy of this classroom quiz that was so controversial.
Right. And when she stood up in public, to some degree, that's still hearsay. But at least it was hearsay in a setting to where there had to be some response from the city, the school officials. You know what I'm saying? It was a confrontation staged in public, which meant that at least was a confrontation that you could quote and describe, if that makes sense. That placed it onto more journalistic turf, as opposed to simply listening to the complaining parents, and that's that.
So just kind of a checklist that the journalist would need in going in and covering this very story. Let's say this story existed kind of in a vacuum, and he had a checklist when he's sitting in the parking lot of the school or the school district or sitting in the driveway of the family that's complaining. What's his checklist so he can actually write the story and get both sides?
Okay, your problem is, you've got, it tends to be all one extreme or the other. The typical one, the one we hear about over and over and over, is complaining parents, maybe they're ministers and maybe they're lawyers, and this is what they claim happened. And the public school says nothing. That's the reporter's nightmare, because you're trying to report the views of both sides. At least that's as normally defined, that's your goal. So you're trying to get both sides to talk to you, but what do you do when one side doesn't? Quite frankly, this is another one of the reasons reporters hate covering a lot of religion stories, is something wild happens, they call the church up, and the church refuses to talk to them, because the church leaders view this all as bad public relations, and if they don't talk, it'll go away. Do you see that that's exactly the same attitude as the public school leaders?
Yeah.
I mean, you're trying to wave a magic wand and make the story go away. So it ends up in the kind of the extreme media on both sides. So on one side, you read just the school's views. On the other side, you read just the angry parents' views, and so forth and so on. I've had a clause that for several decades now, two decades now at least, that I have suggested that public school officials use when facing this kind of situation. When religious parents, normally that means evangelical or conservative Catholic, when these parents come up and they're standing in front of your desk and they're complaining that their child is being forced to take part in classroom activities that they view as a violation of their religious faith, school officials should look them in the face and do everything in their power to pretend that they're Muslims or maybe Native Americans or something like that. In other words, say, I'm going to treat the situation exactly the same way I would if the people that were complaining about it were a minority group that all of my sensitivity training sessions have taught me to try to be sensitive to. In other words, if a Muslim came to me and said, I'm having the following problem with what you're teaching about religion or sex or world history or, you know, even Israel or something like that, the school official would probably say, yes, this is true. We should try to find some way to moderate the situation and give your children some way of working around it. Or even say it's even a dietary issue, or it's a situation in the cafeteria involving Ramadan food and stuff like that. Public school officials are highly motivated to work to achieve peace with the minority groups that they respect and have been trained to respect. We're still in an era right now where when they look at conservative Christians, they don't see them as a religious minority that they respect and that they have been trained to try to accommodate in ways that they will find acceptable. And to some degree, to me, that's the bigger story behind all of this. How long can this go on, especially on the sexuality issues? I mean, is this going to just turn into a permanent lawyers' employment act? Or at some point, will traditional religious believers with traditional beliefs on sexuality simply have to say, we have to exit the public schools en masse, and we want our lawyers to try to have that somehow reflected in the political reality in our communities? Picture yourself in Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, maybe Georgia. And what would happen if all of a sudden all of the state's Southern Baptist churches, all of the Assembly of God churches, all of the African American and Latino Pentecostal churches, all of the African American Baptist churches, all decided, okay, things have gone too far. We need to leave the public schools. If and when that happens, is that going to be a fairly big story in those states?
I've got one more question for you with about a minute here, Terry. What are your general journalistic caveats about getting your news from what you've called the alternative conservative media, that stuff that ends up in our news feeds all over the place?
Excellent question. I would urge listeners to think of this in one way. Are they quoting documents? The more controversial a story is, the more important it is to say, do you have this on paper? Because when that happens, you've moved out of he said, she said. You've moved out of secondhand information, and all of a sudden, you're now dealing with a public document. And I would include in that the transcript of a speech. And sometimes in our age of cell phones and digital recorders, we're ending up with videos and recordings from places that previously were private, right? But the main thing is, am I dealing with words on a piece of paper that a side cannot deny exists? And I see that sort of thing quoted all the time in the conservative press and the liberal press for that matter. So I don't necessarily have to accept their interpretation of the document, but it's very important whether I can read the document for myself.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, and he's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you very much.
Have you seen the new Here I Stand long-sleeve T-shirts? We just came out with those. That's a T-shirt that has Here I Stand instead of I Have Issues. On the back, it's got our website, our logo, and our tagline, Real Reformation Radio. And then on the left sleeve, you've got the Luther seal along with the Reformation anniversary dates, 1517 to 2017. We'll send it to you if you join our monthly or annual giving program called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by Martin Luther's birthday. That's Tuesday, November the 10th. Find out the benefits of becoming an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron by clicking the Here I Stand T-shirt at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Craig, 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Monday on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Dr. Albert Mohler, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, about a Christian response to the moral revolution. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc. Have a great weekend.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November 4th through 10th, and join us for a live broadcast from CPH on Thursday afternoon, November the 5th. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale online and in store, cph.org and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale, November 4th through 10th.